Welcome to Soundbites, true stories told by local Mainers and nationally recognized storytellers. The themes are always changing and the hosts are from all over the nation, but when you hear the name Soundbites, you're in for a unique storytelling experience. Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. This story was told live at One Longfellow Square in Portland, where the event's dedicated theme was Turning Point. Here's today's host, Detroit-based storyteller and podcaster, Dame Wilbur.
So please put your hands together and welcome our next storyteller, Brendan Schneider.
Hi.
I was having this dream. I'm standing in my kitchen, and I'm staring up at a hole in the ceiling. And there's something rude about this hole. Mean. There are men in my apartment, too. I can hear them talking. Low tones, somehow in charge. And it was like they own my apartment, not me. And that's when I woke up. I walked over to my kitchen, half expecting that hole to still be there. A week passes. I get home one night, and no sooner do I take off my shoes and my scarf than I hear an erratic knock at the door. Get out. Fire. Fire. Get out. It was my next door neighbor. Now, I tried making friends with her a few times, but she always seemed more occupied with the floor. She walked around like it was made of eggs. Now she was standing in my doorway, wavering in a way too revealing turquoise robe. But I'm caught by the thin line of black smoke leaking from her apartment. There's a fire, and you have to call the fire department. All right, no problem. I'll call them. Are you okay? And she turns around. She walks down the hall, ignores me. Fire, everyone. There's a fire. So I close my door, kind of ticked off, right? I mean, it's probably something burning up in her oven. She's going to make everyone stand outside in the middle of February while Boston's Finest rescues her burnt up spinach. But I'm cool. I call 911, put my scarf back on, my shoes back on, and open my door again. In that amount of time, the hallway turned to smoke. Just black, thick, completely void of life. So I walk down the hall, feel my way down, I walk out the front door, and I'm standing in the middle of the street. And no one was outside yet. In the distance, I can hear sirens coming together. And that part really sticks out. The eerie certainty that you know exactly where fire engines are headed. So I turn around, and I'm looking at the building, and these manic shadows are starting to dance around the lower windows, right? And the situation is starting to sink in. And now people are spilling from the building, walking through the smoke. Some of them are crying. Some of them are just confused. And it's going like an old movie, right? Flashes, and I can see baseball hats and phones, one shoe on, one shoe off. And I'm trying to make sense of it, and the sirens are getting closer, and I need some kind of connection to reality. So I call my friend Kathy. Hey, Brendan, what's up? I'm watching my building burn down. What? Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I'm on my way. Don't move. So I look across the street, and I see Chrissy standing there. She lived upstairs. We always had an uncanny way of getting the mail at the same time. So I say, hey, Chrissy, you all right? And she says, I'm really cold. So I take off my scarf, and I wrap it around her neck. She smiled and tried to thank me. And that's when fire engines swung onto our street, and those orange shadows in the first floor windows started to pulse around and challenge. We all just stood there, watching this fire. I mean, what else are you going to do? You have these Hollywood moments, you know, it's a fire brigade, you know, here come the buckets. None of that happens. Everyone just stands there. After a while, we found Kathy. Kathy found me in the crowd. And the fire engines are there, and they're fighting the fire, right? She finds me in the crowd. She pulls me into a hug. And I say, it's all right, Kathy. Me and the firemen are in there. They'll probably let us back in soon. Brendan, honey, your building is engulfed in flames. And it's freezing out here. Why don't you come back to my place? You can put on some sweaters. You and David can come back. And just then, a stretcher being led from the front door. And the paramedics are lifting it up over the fire hoses. And I'm straining to see the face underneath the oxygen mask. A turquoise robe dangling near one of the wheels. Oh my God, Kathy, do you know her? She's my neighbor. Back at Kathy and David's place, we find a friend David eating dinner. And I tell him about the whole fire, and I can tell that the gears in his brain are turning, right? And when I'm done, he walks down the hall without a word. He disappears around the corner. He comes back with a light strapped to the top of his head. And Kathy and I watch as he flips this intricate series of switches. And these two beams of impossible radiance shoot down the hall. And he nods his head in approval, and those beams, they bounce up and down, too. He shuts off the switch there, and he hands me a flashlight, puts on his coat. It was all very official. Even with my life burning down a half mile away, I busted out laughing. And David says, what's so funny? And I said, this, all this, this gear. What are you, a friggin' coal miner? Where the hell do you get all this stuff? Hey, look, Brendan. If they let us back into your apartment, which is pretty friggin' unlikely because of structural damage, you're going to want to get stuff out of there. You're going to need all the hands he can get. And I hadn't thought of any of that. As far as I was concerned, I was going back into my building. But what if I couldn't? And my stuff. I mean, what if I couldn't recover my stuff? What about my stuff? My stuff, the stuff in the closet, and the stuff underneath the bed, and the pictures, and the computer. And David says to me, stop staring at my headlamp. It's mine, and you're not getting it. A few minutes later, we're walking down my street, and that angry fire is now just puffs of smoke blowing from the roof. And we find the fire chief, and he tells us that we have 10 minutes inside. Take essentials. That's it. And I remember standing in the doorway of my building. You turn on the flashlight, and I was looking at my breath, in the beam of the flashlight. This lobby was brilliant white art deco not an hour before. And now it looked like a mudslide. Water was dripping, and the stairs looked haunted. A flashlight beam broke through my train of thoughts. Who's there? The fire chief said I can check out my apartment, the one you're standing in. Okay, come on over. Just watch your step. My apartment looked like the inside of a club. Everything was black, except for the bright, white, sharply defined shapes scattered along the walls. Rude reminders of the pictures that were hanging there not an hour before. My bedroom wall had fallen in to my apartment and was in pieces. Everything was in pieces on the floor. I step over a bookcase and into the cave that was now my kitchen. And I zero in on a wicker shelf sitting there on the floor. Now, I didn't own anything wicker. I'd never seen it before. I mean, maybe the fireman threw it in there. I mean, it couldn't have just fallen from the... A section of the ceiling had been torn away, and I froze. Because I knew this. I knew this moment. This was the dream. This was the dream from a week before. Now I knew the guys in my apartment who were talking low tones. They were the firemen. But now I couldn't wake up. I looked over and David shaking plaster from the pages of a book. And I said, David, I'm homeless. I mean, look at this place. It's gone. David, I'm homeless. You're not homeless. You live with me and Kathy till you can find a place. Gentlemen, we have to clear out of here. The building's not safe. And David says, well, Brendan, what are we taking? Take a second to think about your homes right now, right? Think about the books on the shelves and the stuff in the closet and the papers underneath the bed that you haven't seen and looked at in months. What's important? What's not? But hurry, because you only have a minute to decide. 1 minute to take what you and David can carry or never see it again. We took my computer discs, the draft of my first book, my Bible, my rosary beads, my checkbook. You do remember that, right? And a couple of random clothes. But I kept looking around. I mean, I couldn't leave. And David said, "Brandon, you forgetting something?" And I said, "Yeah, my life." And that's when I noticed a glimmer coming from the pile of wall in the corner of the room. My flashlight was reflecting off of the tuner head of my guitar buried there. And I went berserk. I dropped the flashlight, tore across the room, and I dug into the pile of wall. And David trained his flashlight on me, and I said, "You see this? This guitar? It's mine. The fire's not taking it." "Brendan, it's all right." "No, the fire took everything, but it can't have this, not this too." And then I felt a hand on my shoulder. And David said, "I wouldn't have left it either. Come on, we're done." Out at David's car, I started laughing. And he said, "Now what?" And I said, "Look at me. Jacket all covered in soot, one hand holding a guitar, the other a Bible, rosary beads around my neck. I must look like a real religious fanatic." He said, no, you don't. You just look honest." The following day, the building inspector said it was safe enough to go inside. And I still remember David lurching a giant bag of books into his back seat. "You really lucked out here, Bren. We were able to get most of your stuff out. But think about it. What if you weren't home? What if you were in bed? I mean, what if you weren't around to call on the fire?" And I looked at my desktop computer. We hadn't put it in David's car yet. And I said, "Yeah, all this stuff would have gone up." And he said, "Or maybe someone would have died. I think you played a role in all this." And I look across the street and I see Chrissy placing a bunch of clothes in her back seat. And I say, "Hey, Chrissy." And she says, "Oh, hey, Brendan. Your stuff okay?" I said, "Yeah, we were able to get most of it out. It's in my friend's car over there. Everything's still a giant mess, though." She says, "Tell me about it." "Hey, listen, I've been thinking. We're homeless, right? If you're looking for a place and I'm looking for a place, maybe we can find a two-bedroom somewhere." You barely know me. Anyone who would just hand me their scarf without any reason of thinking he's ever going to get back again sounds pretty cool to me. "Wow, sure. All right, let's do it. Thank you." And as David and I pulled away, I waved goodbye to my new roommate. Over the course of the next few days, I scoured every one of my belongings. If you've ever been in a fire before, you know that the Red Cross gives you this soap that gets the smell of smoke out. But it takes, what they don't tell you is that it takes like a lot of washings to get the smell of smoke out. So if you ever want an intimate sense of your belongings, sit in David and Kathy's basement and scour it all. And when that bizarre cleaning session was finished, a turning point in my life came into sharp focus. It's just stuff. 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 We place such value on all of it, the books and the music and the laptops and the phones. Almost like it's an extension of our identity, right? But it's not. It's dead. We're alive. And in retrospect, I think David was onto something. That night could have turned out a lot different. And I don't know, who knows? Maybe I did save somebody. Now, the night before Chrissy and I moved into our new place, I had another dream. I'm walking into a house that has two rooms. The room to the left was right out of the 1940s. Everything was an antique, but brand new. So old, but in pristine condition. And I try to take a closer look, and I hear a voice from over my shoulder. "No, Brendan, I'm in here. So I turned and I faced the other room. This room was different. It didn't have a particular time. The walls were white and clean, and there wasn't a floor. All the floor was made of soil. And I step on to the soil, and that's when I noticed a man standing in the far side of the room. You know when you're underwater and you look at somebody, you could make out their features, but everything's kind of fuzzy? That's how it was with this man. And I said to him, "Where are we? What is this place?" But I already knew. I was standing in what would become my room, in the apartment that Kirstie and I were moving into. And the man said to me, "This room is your foundation. This is where we will begin." Thank you very much.
Performance instructor, host, and TEDx coach Brendan Schneider is a Boston area storyteller who has been featured on WGBH Studios and other action-packed venues across New England. He is a Moth Story Slam winner and a Grand Slam finalist, winner of multiple Mass Mouth regional and semifinal slams, and a three-time finalist for Mass Mouth's annual Big Mouth Off show. He's been featured as a performer and host at the Northeast Storytellers Annual Conference and recently monitored a panel of master storytellers at Juilliard in New York City. He loves performing in Maine because, well, let's face it, the state really has the best audiences.
We went backstage before the show to catch up with today's storyteller. They shared some personal tidbits that aren't included in their story.
So, what is your connection to Maine?
This is the state that my wife and I come to sort of find our center again. And let's face it, Maine really has the best audiences.
That's a good answer. What got you into storytelling?
I used to tell stories at parties, and one night my friend Aaron came up to me and he said, "Why aren't you doing this on stage?" And I said, "Because I'm not stand-up." And he said, "There's a whole scene for it. You should do it." So I started doing it, and that was 10 years ago, and I haven't looked back.
What is your process for preparing to tell a story?
I pray.
Who do you pray to?
I pray to God.
All of them or just one?
Just one, really. The whole idea there is storytellers each have their own process of preparing, and you really prepare for, 5 to 10 minutes, and you really hope that everything's smooth and everything's cool. So I don't just pray for me, but I pray for everyone that gets up on stage that it's a good show and people dig it and we all are good tellers.
Thank you, because I need all the prayer you got. No problem. And if you got anybody else who's going to pray, call them up. Tell us about one part of your story that you're not including in the telling tonight.
When Kirstie and I were looking for a new apartment, there was a guy who was outside randomly who said, "Well, the building across the street has vacancies. You should look into that place." And it turned out that the person who owned our building that was burned out also owned this other building, and we got in there without paying for first-last security. We just went right in. So that was another interesting coincidence associated with the story.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Thank you.
Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. Special thanks also to Toad & Co. More information about Soundbites, including how to attend a live storytelling event, is online at soundbitesme.org. And of course, you can always hear more stories at mainepublic.org.